As Inspector Grant went to collect the girl from the police car outside the gates, Marion Sharp explained Blair's presence to her mother. "You have my sympathy, Mr. Blair," the old woman said, unsympathetically. "I take it that Broadmoor is a little out of your line?"
"Broadmoor?
Criminal lunacy."
"On the contrary, I find it extraordinarily stimulating," Robert said, refusing to be bullied by her. And he had the odd feeling that she suddenly liked him. When Inspector Grant returned with the girl and the police matron, he came in first so that he was in a position to see the expressions on all the faces concerned. The girl was wearing her school coat and childish, low-heeled, clumpish black school shoes. But she had, what was the word? Appeal. Her eyes, a darkish blue, were set wide apart, and below each cheekbone a slight hollow gave the face charm and pathos. Her lower lip was full, but the mouth was too small. So were her ears, too small and too close to her head. An ordinary sort of girl, after all. Not at all the type to be the heroine of a sensation. Robert wondered what she would look like in other clothes. The girl's glance rested first on the old woman and then Marion. The glance held neither surprise nor triumph.
"Yes, these are the women," she said.
"You have no doubt?" Grant asked. "It is a very grave accusation, you know."
"No, I have no doubt. How could I?"
"You say we took you into the kitchen," Marion said.
"Yes."
"Can you describe it?"
"I didn't pay much attention. It was a big one, with a stone floor, I think, and a row of bells."
"What kind of stove?"
"I didn't notice, but the pan the old woman heated the coffee in was a chipped, pale blue enamel one with a dark blue edge."
"I doubt if there's a kitchen in England that hasn't a pan like that," Marion said.
"Is the girl a virgin?"
asked Mrs. Sharp.
In the startled pause, Robert was aware of Hallam's scandalized face, the blood running up into the girl's, and the fact that there was no protesting mother from Marion. Grant said that the matter was irrelevant.
"You think so?" said the old lady. "If I had been missing for a month from my home, it is the first thing my mother would have wanted to know about me. However, now that the girl has identified us, what do you propose to do, arrest us?"
"Oh, no. Things are a long way from that at the moment. For now, I want to take Miss Kane to the kitchen and the attic, so that her descriptions of them can be verified. If they are, I report on the case, and my superior decides what further steps to take." Mrs. Sharp rose slowly to her feet.
"Ah, well, if you will excuse me, I shall go back to my interrupted rest."
Surprised for once out of his composure, Grant blurted out, "Don't you want to be present to hear the—" "Oh, dear, no. I have not the faintest doubt Miss Kane will identify the attic. Indeed, I should be surprised beyond belief if she failed to."
She began to move towards the door, and consequently towards the girl. She examined the girl's face with interest.
"For two people who are on beating terms, we are distressingly ill-acquainted," she said at last.
Then, ignoring the rest of the gathering, she walked out of the door.
There was a distinct feeling of anticlimax, and Robert felt a reluctant admiration. It was no small achievement to steal the interest from an outraged heroine. Grant and the girl accompanied Robert and Marion Sharp on the inspection of the house. After the girl had identified the kitchen, Robert said, as they reached the first floor landing, "Miss Kane said the second flight of stairs was covered in something hard, but the same carpet continues from the first flight."
"Only to the curb," Marion said. "Round the corner it struck it. A Victorian way of economizing. The lush stuff went as far as the eye could see, and no farther."
The girl had been right about the third flight, too. The treads were bare. The all-important attic was a low, square little room. It was lit only by the round window looking out to the front of the house. The window was divided into four panes, one of which showed a crack. The attic was completely bare of furnishing. Unnaturally bare, Robert thought. There used to be stuff here when we first came, Marion said, as if answering him. But when we found we should be without help half the time, we got rid of it. Grant turned to the girl.
The bed was in that corner, she said, and the wooden commode. And in this corner, behind the door, there were two suitcases and a trunk with a flat top. There was a chair, but she took it away after I tried to break the window.
It seemed to Robert that the crack in the window looked much more than a few weeks old. But there was no denying it was there, and there were marks of casters where the bed had stood.
There was a bed there, Marion said. We gave it to the cowman's wife over at Staples Farm. We get our dairy stuff from Staples.
Where do you keep your suitcases, Miss Sharp? Grant asked.
I keep them in the cupboard on the first floor landing.
For the first time, Marion hesitated.
We do have a trunk with a flat top. My mother uses it to store things in. It's in her room.
Miss Kane, do you remember what the cases looked like?
Yes. One was brown leather with those sort of caps at the corners, and the other was a canvas-covered one with stripes.
May we see the suitcases? Grant asked.
Certainly,
Marion said, but she seemed unhappy. And when she opened the cupboard door and stood back to let the inspector look, Robert caught an unguarded flash of triumph on the girl's face. It so altered her calm, rather childish face, it shocked him. It was a savage emotion, primitive and cruel, very startling on the face of a demure schoolgirl who was the pride of her guardians and teachers. The cupboard contained two suitcases, a brown cowhide with protected corners, and a square canvas-covered hatbox with multicolored stripes. Are these the cases? Grant asked.
Yes,
said the girl.
I'm not going to disturb my mother again this afternoon, Marion said with sudden anger. I acknowledge that the trunk in her room is flat-topped. It has been there without interruption for the last 3 years.
Very good, Miss Sharp. Now, the garage, if you please. They stood and surveyed the battered old grey car as Grant read out the girl's description from his notebook. One of the wheels was painted a different shade. It was the one in front on my side as it was standing at the pavement. They looked at the darker grey of the near front wheel.
Thank you very much, Miss Sharp, Grant said at length. I shall be able to get you on the telephone, I suppose, if I want to talk to you further.
Oh, yes, Inspector, we have no intention of going anywhere.
Grant handed over the girl to the matron, and they left. Then he and Hallam took their leave. Marion had gone out into the hall with them, and when she came back, she was carrying a tray with sherry and glasses.
I don't ask you to stay for dinner, she said to Blair, partly because our dinner is usually a very scratch supper and not at all what you're used to, and partly because, well, as my mother said, Broadmoor is a little out of your line, I expect.
About that, Robert said, you do realize that the girl has an enormous advantage over you, in the matter of evidence. She is free to describe almost any object she likes as being part of your household. If it happens to be there, that is strong evidence for her. If it happens not to be there, that is not evidence for you. The inference is merely that you've got rid of it. He picked up the glass of sherry she had set down beside him, took a mouthful, and was astonished to find it admirable. She smiled.
We economize, but not on wine.
And he flushed, wondering if his surprise had been as obvious as that.
But the odd wheel of the car, Marion continued, how did she know about that? How did she know about my mother and me, and what the house looked like? Our gates are never open.
No chance of her having made friends with a maid, Robert asked, or a gardener?
We've never had a gardener, and we haven't had a maid for a year, just a girl who comes in once a week and does the rough cleaning.
Robert said it was a big house to have on her hands, unaided.
Yes, but I'm not a house-proud woman, and it is still so wonderful to have a home of our own that I'm willing to put up with the disadvantages. My mother and I had always lived in a Kensington boarding-house. One corner of her mouth moved up in a wry smile. You could imagine how popular Mother was with the other residents. The smile faded. My father died when I was very little. He was one of those optimists who were always going to be rich tomorrow.
When he found one day that his speculations had not left enough, even for a loaf of bread, he committed suicide and left Mother to face things. Robert felt that this to some extent explained Mrs. Sharp. "I wasn't trained for a profession," Marion said, "so my life has been spent in odd jobs. When old Mr. Crowell died, he was my father's cousin, I was working in a tea shop. Yes, it is a little difficult."
"What is?"
"To imagine me among the teacups."
Robert, unused to having his mind read, Aunt Lynn was incapable of following anyone's mental processes, even when they were explained to her, was disconcerted.
"We had just begun to feel at home and safe when this happened."
For the first time since she had asked for his help, Robert felt the stirring of partisanship. "And all because a slip of a girl needs an alibi," he said. "We must find out more about Betty Kane."
"I can tell you one thing about her. She's oversexed."
"Is that just feminine intuition?"
"No, I'm not very feminine, and I have no intuition. But I have never known anyone with that colour of eye who wasn't. That opaque, dark blue, it's infallible."
Robert smiled at her, indulgently. She was very feminine, after all.
"And don't feel superior because it happens not to be lawyer's logic. Have a look round and see."
Before Robert could stop himself, he thought of Gerald Blunt, the Milford scandal. Assuredly Gerald had slate-blue eyes. So had Arthur Wallace, the postman at the White Hart. So had... Damn the woman. She had no business to make a silly generalization and be right.
"It's fascinating to speculate on what she really did during that month," Marion said. "It affords me intense satisfaction that someone beat her black and blue. At least that is one person who has arrived at a correct estimate of her."
"Well," Robert said, preparing to go, "I doubt very much whether Grant has a case that he will want to present in court. It would be the girl's word against yours."
Marion shook her head. "But whether he brings it into court or not, sooner or later a thing like that begins to be whispered about. It would be no comfort to us not to have the thing cleared up."
"Oh, it will be cleared up, if I have anything to do with it."
"If he did bring it to court and get a guilty verdict, what would that mean for us?"
"I'm not sure whether it would be 2 years' imprisonment or 7 years' penal servitude. I shall have to look it up."
"Yes, do. There's quite a difference."
He decided he liked her habit of mockery.
"Goodbye," she said. "It was kind of you to come. You have been a great comfort to me."
Robert, remembering how nearly he had thrown her to Ben Carley, blushed to himself as he walked to the gate.